Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Intelligence Matters ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
This is Intelligence Matters with former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell. Brought to you by Palantir Technologies, foundational software of tomorrow, delivered today.
Zohar Palti is a career Israeli intelligence officer, serving in the Israeli Defense Forces and the Mossad. He also served as the head of the Political Military Bureau at the Israeli Ministry of Defense, a job from which he just retired. I just sat down with Zohar to talk about his amazing career and about where the Middle East is going in the years ahead. Just a quick note to our listeners. My friend Zohar was overseas when we taped this. We had to overcome a few technical issues. So thanks for being patient with us. I'm Michael Morell, and this is Intelligence Matters.
June's Journey is a fascinating hidden object mystery gaming app where you'll play as June Parker, tasked with a daunting obligation: solve your sister's murder. Set in the 1920s, the era of glitz and glam, this family mystery is one for the ages. Everyone's a suspect until your investigation determines otherwise. The clues are all around you, hidden within tricky twists and turns. You'll collect detailed information about each character in your photo album, where you'll comb over every detail. You can even join a detectives club to chat and play with others or against them in the detectives league. With hundreds of puzzles to solve, you should probably get started today. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Zohar, welcome to Intelligence Matters. It is always good to talk to you. I'm really excited about our conversation. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. And thank you so much, Michael.
So Zohar, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about your career, and then we'll get into some substantive issues. But I want to start with your career. And you join the Israeli Defense Forces as an 18-year-old, and you very quickly become an intelligence officer. And I'm wondering if becoming an intelligence officer was something that the IDF chose for you, or was it something that you raised your hand and said, I want to be an intelligence officer? How did that work?
So, as a matter of fact, I started in the armor course, and after a very short time, they decided that it's better that I move to the intelligence course. And I was a couple of months as a simple soldier, and then I went to an officer course. After 1.5 years, I was an officer, intelligence officer in the Northern Front. When all the IDF used to spend in Lebanon, it was like 84. And since then, I'm in the intelligence, combination of the military intelligence and, of course, the Mossad later on. And this is it.
So, Zohar, you spend nearly a quarter century, a little bit less than a quarter century, as an intelligence officer in the IDF. And obviously, much, much happened in those 25 years. Two intifadas with the Palestinians, multiple wars in Lebanon against the PLO and against Hezbollah, wars in Gaza against Hamas. I'm wondering if you can share any memories of your time in the IDF with our listeners.
I think the generation that, like me, that was recruited to the army at 82 is very much under the influence of our staying in Lebanon for 17, 18 years. And the fact that we had to serve over there. And thank to Prime Minister, former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, that took us out in 2000. This is one milestone for my military service. The other one, of course, is as the city chief in the military intelligence, the Second Intifada. It was horrible to have like dozens of suicide attacks in a democratic country like us, in the main cities like Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa, Hadera, and all the other ones. That was a defining moment for us. 2007, the attack on the Syrian nuclear reactor. I think this is the main milestones that I can draw right now.
You actually, Zohar, you actually spent time in Lebanon, is that correct?
Yeah, I was an intelligence officer of an infantry brigade, the Golani Brigade, and I was the deputy intelligence officer of the Northern Division of Israel that spread all over the Lebanese border, and serving other operational unit in the military intelligence. I spent a lot of time in Lebanon.
So Zohar, in 2006, in the middle of that second Lebanon war, somebody named Meir Dagan, who we're going to come back to in a second, then the director of Mossad, brings you to Mossad to run the counterterrorism division in the intelligence branch. Then Meir makes you the head of the strategic analysis division in Mossad. And then Tamir Pardo, who is the successor director to Meir Dagan, nominates you to be the director of intelligence, the person in charge of all of the analysis at Mossad. And that's where you and I really worked closely together during my time as head of analysis at CIA and then as the deputy director. And I'd love to ask you a couple of questions about that period of time. The first is just to talk a little bit about Meir Dagan, who I met many times and I really found to be a remarkable man. So I'm just wondering if you could talk about Meir a little bit.
Sure, no doubt that Meir was a remarkable guy. And mainly, he was a commander. He loved the people. He came from the army. Used to be a major general in the Israeli army. And then Prime Minister Sharon nominated him to be the director of Mossad. Dagan brought the spirit, first and foremost, is the people. And you, Michael, as former DI, you understand how important is the people. They're actually the one that are doing the job. They are the one that are leading the organization. And Mary gave them so much respect. He used to sit with all the analysts like 2 hours every week to listen to them, to debate with them as equal. That's one. Second issue, Dagan gave the priority to the Mossad. First and foremost, counterproliferation and mainly the Iranian issue. And the second issue is counterterrorism, to foil any attempt to hurt, of course, Israelis and Jewish all over the world and in Israel, and of course to help to our allies and some friendly country otherwise. And we've done a remarkable job, all the intelligence services, leading by Dagan. Dagan was a man of his word. He was courage enough, not only in the battlefield, he was courage enough in order to say exactly what he thought in closed rooms, whether the politician or the decision makers like it or whether not. And no doubt, a really, really impressive guy.
Meir was there at the birth of the State of Israel, wasn't he?
Meir, as a matter of fact, there was a very famous picture in his office of a child that is raising his hands, a Jewish, of course, during the Holocaust. And Dagan gave us the sense he came, he was an immigrant from East Europe, and he gave us the sense, guys, never again. And that's why he tell the Mossad guys, our first priority is to prevent from a country like Iran, for example, country that are saying that they want to eliminate the state of Israel, the slogan was never again. And the Mossad, his point of view was that the Mossad have to lead all the efforts in order to foil the Iranian attempts to get a nuclear, military and nuclear capabilities. And this week we are, you know, there is, yesterday it was the Memorial Day for the Holocaust over here. And no doubt that the legacy that Dagan gave us in this issue is still here.
So Zohar, I think that's a great transition to the second question I wanted to ask you about during your time as Director of Intelligence at Mossad. And that's the Iranian nuclear program, something you and I worked very closely on during the time we were working on it in 2010, 2011, 2012. The Iranians were moving rapidly forward on uranium enrichment, expanding their program, deepening their sophistication. And you were the senior intelligence analyst, Israeli intelligence analyst, in the room for discussions about whether Israel should attack Iran's nuclear program in 2011, 2012. And I'd love if you could talk a little bit about how close Israel actually came during that period to attacking Iran, and talk a little bit about the role of intelligence in that discussion and how important it was.
First of all, you know, Israel is a democratic country, and by law, we are under the instruction of the Israeli government. Till the Israeli government is not taking decision, the culture in Israel is saying that in a closed room, the intelligence community is not only allowed, must say whatever they think. And my job in that room as the director of intelligence was to crystallize hundreds and dozens of hours internal discussions with my analysts and with the professionals in the Mossad and in the intelligence community all over Israel, and to try to crystallize the bottom line to the decision makers whether this is the right time to do it or not. We used to be very close because we got an instruction back then from our decision makers to prepare ourselves, and we did. But at the same time, there have been discussions all the time whether we should do it or not. And based on the intel that back then we used to have, we knew that the Iranians are doing quite a good job regarding the enrichment program. And back then they have several of SQs, if you remember. But at the same time, we didn't have any indication that they're actually trying to build the bomb. And we said that as long as they're not actually weaponizing and don't have what we call the weaponized group that orchestrate all the components together, we should wait with that, and this is not the right moment to do it. Right now, a decade after it, I can say that probably the intel was right back then.
And Zohar, is it safe to say that intelligence was a very important factor in the decision-making of the prime minister and the rest of the security cabinet at that time?
I think even more than that, the intelligence was a crucial one. By the way, always in the Israeli system, the intelligence is crucial. Any meeting, any gathering, starting always with intel picture, whether it's a tactical one or whether it's a strategic one. And the change or the things that are not changing in the intel picture, they are part of the discussion at the right moment when we are doing the gathering with our policymakers. And I think it was a crucial, and the intel were very, very much influential regarding the issue whether to do it or whether not. And I have to add something more than that. And it's great that we have close friends and allies like you, Michael, and with the agency and with other partners that we have in Europe, that we can share so many things together. And it's so important to all of us.
Zohar, just one more career question. You finished your career as the head of the Political Military Bureau of Israel's Ministry of Defense. You know, what took you from what took you there, and then what's the role of the Ministry of Defense's Political Military Bureau? What was your job?
In American terms, it's very it's like equivalent, not in the scales. Of course, America is much bigger than us, to the position of the Undersecretary for Policy in the Pentagon, meaning everything that regarding the policy of the Ministry of Defense was under my portfolio. And of course, to keep the outstanding relationship and connection, first and foremost, that we have with the United States of America, and mainly with the Pentagon, because DOD, the Ministry of Defense is working with the DOD, and of course with the American Army, CENTCOM, EUCOM, and all the other ones, and all the other Ministry of Defense around the world, that you're the one that is holding the relationship, keeping the strategic dialogues and things like that. This is a portfolio of this job, if I'm trying to crystallize that. And of course, one of the best, the best thing that I had during the last 2 years is to implement the IBRAM Accords. And this is a game changer, and to establish a center defense relationship between us and the Arab countries, mainly the Gulfies, and of course, the Moroccans.
So Zohar, is it safe to say that the Abraham Accords took the relationship between Israel and some of the Gulf countries from the security realm, which it had been growing, into the political realm and into the public realm? Is that a fair statement?
It's exactly how you phrase it. It's so beautiful. And this time we learned a lesson from, I think we're trying to learn the lesson from some of the mistakes that we've done with Egypt and Jordan decades ago. And I'm so happy as a security guy to see that the first and foremost was to establish the civilian side, the commercial flights, the private sector and things like that. And only then came the Minister of Defense and all the other ones. It seems to me that we are building it right. It's peace between the people with an open heart and open mind. It's really amazing to see how many direct flights we have right now to Marrakesh and to Gaza and to, of course, Abu Dhabi and Dubai. It's for a guy like me to land with an Al airplane with the flag of Israel on the tail. Many, many years I was landing into those places, not exactly with Israeli flags. It's great. And we're very proud about it, and we're grateful to our prime minister back then that used to do it, of course, to the Americans, to the president, and mainly the courage that the Arab leaders, mainly the UAE guys and the Bahrainis and the Moroccans, took a very, very bold decisions. And it seems to me it's great.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with more of our discussion with Zohar Palti.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone, and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
So Zohar, I want to turn to some more substantive issues here. And first one I want to ask you about is Israel's approach to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. There's been some criticism of Israel's reluctance not to more strongly rebuke Russia. Can you kind of put that into context for us?
First of all, there is no words to express how devastating the situation is. And of course, that every person that see whatever what happening is right now in Ukraine, you can ignore from that. And it's really devastating. But at the same time, you have to understand that Israel is in a unique place. On one hand, we have so many balls in the air. Right now, it's the last days of the Ramadan. We're 2 days before the independence. 2 days ago, 3 days ago, there have been a rocket that was launched from Lebanon. At the same time, I heard in the news that there was a courtesy visit of some Air Force in Syria dealing with Iranians and Hezbollah targets. Simultaneously, we have some tension right now in the Temple Mount. At the same time, we have challenge from Gaza. I think that not in every, let's say, security issue that happening in the world, Israel have to be in the focus. We have to do whatever we can in order to help from a humanitarian point of view to the Ukrainians. They are friends of us, and we sent medical support, and we sent helmets, and we sent so many other humanitarian aid. And it seems to me that we should continue to do things like that, but not everything should be judged, whether it's a military aid, this one or another. I'm counting on NATO, I'm counting on you guys, I'm counting about the European countries that are doing so many things, and a good one over here. And we will take care about business over here in the neighborhood, and we have a rough neighborhood over here.
So, Har, I want to spend most of our time on Iran. And let me start by asking you about the threat that Iran poses to Israel. How do you see that threat?
First of all, there is the Iranian people and there is the Iranian regime. With the Iranian people, as you know, we have a long history and we have nothing against the Iranian people. And I hope that they don't have nothing against us. And as we say over here in the neighborhood, inshallah, one day we'll come back to be friends of them. The main problem right now is that we're in the Iranian, this regime, that they are really fanatics. And I spoke earlier regarding the Holocaust, the Memorial Day that we just have a day ago. And Israel will never allow to any country around the world to threaten our existential and our rights to live freely in Israel. And the Iranian regime pose a main problem to Israel by saying that he wants to eliminate the states of Israel out of the map. We take it personally. And we have a legacy, as I said before, never again. And we had two prime ministers in our history that paved the way for us with our doctrine. First one was Begin in 1981 with the Osirak reactor in Iraq. The second one was Prime Minister Olmert in 2007 with the Syrian nuclear reactor. And if Iran will challenge us, we know exactly what we have to do. This is regarding the nuclear issue. The other issue that is, of course, the regional one, and the fact that the Iranians are behind so many terrorist attacks in the last 2-3 decades about you as an Americans in Iraq, in Afghanistan, so many lives of your people they took. They're challenging right now your allies and our friends in the Gulf. September 14 attack in 2019 against the Saudis were a vicious one. They're helping the Houthis. They're helping the Shia militias in Iraq. They're using surface-to-surface missiles, cruise missiles, UAVs. The Iranians are destabilizing the region. And over here, this is the main problem that we have with Iran right now. If you take the Iranian issue and the Iranian aggressive from the region, it seems to me that everybody, mainly the Arab countries, would be happy.
So Zohar, I'd love to ask you, the Biden administration is negotiating with the Iranians on a possible return to the 2015 nuclear agreement. Those negotiations have been on again, off again. I wonder what your view is about whether we should return to that agreement or not, and why?
First of all, it seems to me that the Americans have their own policy in order to decide what is the American interest and what not. I don't think that I'm in a position to say to the Americans what to think and what to do. I can reflect the Israeli perspective in that matter. And we'll go back to the agreement in 2013 and 2015, the intermediate agreement and then the final agreement in 2015. Back then in 2013, and I think you've been back then in the business. In 2011-12, you've done great. The sanctions used to work beautifully. And the Iranian used to lose between $60 to $80 billion a year. And we came to you back then, and we said, guys, we're not against an agreement or something like that, but it should be a good agreement. And good agreement, don't rush into it. And I think it was back then a mistake to give the Iranians advanced centrifuges. Back then they used to have only the IR-1 and only the start of the IR-2. And the agreement gave them the permission or the authority to spin centrifuges of the IR-4, IR-6, and IR-8. This is 8 times and 10 times faster than the IR-1s. And right now, not so many years after the agreement, the Iranians are sadly in a quite impressive achievement regarding the enrichment program. And this is not, for them, it's not a bottleneck anymore. This administration, when he came, he spoke about longer and stronger agreement. I don't see right now not longer and not stronger. And it seems to me that we have a lot of question marks, and I don't know all the details. That's why I don't know to tell you whether it's a good one or bad one or something like that. But no doubt that we have some question mark regarding whether Iranians are willing to compromise about some of these issues. The other ones is the Iranians are dragging their feet. And for the last couple of months, we see that Iran is taking advantage that this negotiation is stretching. And we're in a situation that I'm not sure that I like what I see right now.
Zohar, how's Iran different? How's the region different in a world in which there is an agreement and in a world in which there isn't an agreement?
Sadly, regarding that's a tough one. But sadly, if I'm trying to give you a professional answer, I don't see right now something substantial regarding the region. I'm not speaking right now about the nuclear program, about the region that will make the difference. Meaning, the Iranian aggressive with agreements and without an agreements. And the Iranians are using the Houthis in Yemen, and the Iranians are using the Iraqi territory in order to compromise the security of the region over here, of course in Syria, of course in Lebanon with Hezbollah, meaning the Iranians right now are doing a serious terrorist attacks and challenging and compromising the security all over the Middle East. I'm not sure, and over here it's understatement, that an agreement with the Iranian will limit them. On the contrary, we know that the agreement is not about to touch those issues. So I'm not sure that there is a big difference regarding the region.
So Zohar, I understand the regional point, and I agree with 100%. What about on the nuclear front? What's the difference in terms of the development of Iran's nuclear program, nuclear weapons program, between a deal and no deal?
Again, I'm not sure that I know all the details, because right now nothing revealed yet. I'll give you the best scenario that if we have longer and stronger, if we have, meaning the international community have the ability through the AIA to monitor Iran 24/7 with all the technological measures that we have today in 2022, that the inspection can come to which ever site they want to monitor 24/7. To deal with the open files. All those issues, we have to address them. If the agreement is about to give all these issues, it seems to me it's pretty good. But based on what we understand for the time being, I'm not sure that we have an answer for all of this. If there will be an agreement, and I really doubt at the time being, but then again, let's wait and see. It's supposed to stop the enriching progress of the Iranians. And right now, they are spinning centrifuges enriching to 60%, and of course, to 3.5. And I hope that all the material will go out. And this is good. But at the same time, so I have to be very concerned regarding the fact that the disagreement, even if it will be signed 5 minutes from now, there is a milestone over here. And in like several of years from now, in 2026, and then in 30, almost all bets off. And if we think that an agreement will give us a sense that the Iranian issue is behind us, no. Even if there is an agreement, the day after it, we should continue to deal with that and to monitor it and to see that Iranians are not violating everything. And I doubt it, because always the Iranians used to try to deceive. We saw it in the archive. We saw it in other issues. The Iranians are doing really bad things regarding the nuclear issue.
So Zohar, you were against attacking Iran in 2012, but you're not against ever attacking Iran. Is that safe to say?
It's not that we are looking for to attack somebody. The only things that we care is about our family, the existence of Israel, the safety of our children, and of course, the stability in the region. As long as we don't see an imminent threat like it used to be in 2011-12, we will say always, let's give a chance to other options. And even today, I would say the same. But at the same time, when we're coming to the moment that we will understand that in 2 months, 3 months, 2 weeks, or something like that, from the time that one day, I hope that it is not kind, it's going to jeopardize our existence, we'll have to operate. There is no doubt. I spoke before about the legacy of Begin in 81 regarding Iraq, 2007 in Syria, and we know if we have to do it the third time, we're willing to do it. Whether we're looking for that, no. Whether it's a must, no. I think that there is a lot of room to the international community to do a lot of things in order to do it. And right now, it seems to me that the international community, after so many months that they gave so much room to this negotiation, and the Iranians right now give cold shoulder to the international community, it's about how to stretch the sanctions, to tighten them, and to give the Iranian a sense, guys, what you see right now, it's kissed stuff compared to what we have the ability to do.
We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back with more Intelligence Matters. Stay with us.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Zohar, in the couple of minutes we have left here, wonder if you might want to comment a little bit about the CIA. Spent a lot of time working with the organization. Just love your thoughts on the agency.
I will be a bit emotional over here because rarely I have a chance to answer about a question like that. And, you know, to be the city chief of my organization with you guys, I was used to have the honor to see you after September 11 and what you've done all over the world with the global war on terrorism. And I think you have a real heroes in the agencies that gave so many hope and protected almost the entire world from the Al-Qaeda and the global jihad phenomena. And your organization deserves so much credit for saving so many lives. And I know that I'm speaking for myself, but I know that a lot of people over here in Israel owes you, and of course, people over here in the region, mainly Arab countries, are obliged. And really, many, many thanks to your people. That used to be a hell of a job with counterterrorism. And recently, I have to give the credit to your intelligence community. I think it's more than the agency. I think it's other agencies as well. But because you ask about the agency, the fact
that people used to give such a brilliant intel picture about what's supposed to be with the invasion to Ukraine, chapeau. I mean, in the last years, it wasn't the first priority of no one. And nevertheless, it was a remarkable intel picture. Good job.
So Zohar, two last questions from me. One is, I want to ask you what you see as the biggest threat to the future of Israel.
That's a tough one. And I will say something not natural to me. I don't think that we have something existential right now from the outside. If you ask me and you squeeze me, I'm much more concerned about our internal problems. The fact that I see so much diversity among the Israelis. Not a lot of tolerance among ourselves. We need to be much more respectful to each other. And if we will know to work always like as a fist and to understand that we have no other place to go and that at the end of the day, we are stuck with each other no matter our political point of views and things like that, we can overcome and face again any challenge from the outside. And I think this is the main concern that a lot of us have over here, how we are bridging the gaps between ourselves.
Boy, I have exactly the same concern about my own country. So the last question, Zohar, we have a lot of people from the intelligence community, particularly analysts who listen to this program, and we have a lot of college students who also listen to the program who want to be intelligence analysts. And I just want to very quickly ask you, since you spent so much time doing this, what makes a good intelligence analyst?
You pick each question today of the easy one only. Analyst, I think good one, it's a person that rely on a deep knowledge on what the subject it is responsible. You have to be curious. Sometimes you have to be doubtful. You have to read a lot. First thing in the morning, you have to read. Last thing before he's going to sleep, you have to read. He's the man. There is no second one to him in the knowledge on the subject that he is responsible. He have to be total devoted to the cause. I think you have to be with the creative thinking and operational one as well to translate the intel into operations. He have to be the address from the tactical issues till the strategic one, that if there is a question that this analyst, he is the man, you have to give the answers, whether it's tactical or whether it's a strategic one. He had to know the intelligence community inside his own countries and mainly outside with partners and friends. He have to compare notes with them and not to be afraid to said, on the contrary, it's more than not to be afraid. You have to be encouraged enough to say exactly his professional opinion in closed rooms and to give recommendations to the policymakers regarding policy. In Israel, we don't have downtown. We don't have something like that. We, from lieutenant, have to give our recommendation to the decision makers, even if it's policy issues.
Zohar, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real honor to have you on the show. And it's always a special pleasure of mine to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be here. And really, best to everybody.
That was Zohar Palti. I'm Michael Morrell. Please join us next week for another episode of Intelligence Matters.
Intelligence Matters is sponsored by Palantir Technologies, foundational software of tomorrow, delivered today. The show is produced by Olivia Gassis, Jamie Benson, Paulina Smolinski, and Ashley Armstrong. For more from this week's show, visit cbsnews.com. Intelligence Matters is a production of CBS News.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.